हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविर्विश्वावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, page 48, Adhyaya 2, Adhikarna 1. The Vedas are the highest Pramana. The faults of the jiva who tries to prove something spread to the proofs. Because the jiva has faults, and so then those faults will go into his usage of the proofs. Does that make sense? So if you start with shabda, then you miss out on that. Right? Because then you start with authority, then now you're just applying, so you have something to go by. But if you're not starting with then the problem comes is that you're going to immediately do things wrong. So that's why there needs to be shabda.
But now, can we say so that you can interpret shabda?
That's another thing. That then also you could have. That's why we work under authority.
Yes.
You know, in understanding shabda. Like that. So it's always, yes, means when you're dealing with the conditioned soul, then there's always a problem. But the process is designed that despite that problem, the jivas can still move forward. But otherwise, if it's impossible, then no one would get out of here. Right? Among them, Brahma, Pramada, and Karana Patava belong to sense perception, right? So through senses that they can't do. They have faults. Through sense perception, they won't perceive properly due to these faults. Then based on that, there is inference. Right? So they perceive with their senses with these. They have illusion, you know, all these things. They have imperfect senses. Yes.
So, related to yesterday's point of Vyapti, which we said, like, you know, that Vyapti is the logical base for the inference.
Okay.
Inference is what we say as concomitant.
Right.
So, this logical base, this is similar, like, this is considered as one of the 10 ways of knowing knowledge. I think this will come under Upaman, comparison.
Okay.
So, in order to compare one object with the other, you see some logical connection between them.
Yes.
That is the Vyapti. But based on that logical connection, we make an inference. That is the
going to be something. But even what we see, how we see it.
Yeah, that is important.
You know, the thing is so what do you decide? What's the similar point? You know, what is the connection? You know, the wall, you know, has a hardness to it, and the trunk of the tree has a hardness to it, so therefore the tree and the wall are, you know.
Of course, it is not the same. It is not independent.
Yes. 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 So all the, does that make sense? In other words, you're seeing things with your senses. If you start from there, then because you're imperfect, what you see is going to be imperfect. Then any logic you apply based on that imperfect knowledge is going to be imperfect. All right? So. Yeah, it's the opposite of the, Om Purnam Slok. Right, you know.
But we are being connected to the Chitpatansi, it's impossible to get out of this.
Yes, you can't get out unless you're connected to Chit. Because the whole reason we're here is because of ignorance, and you can't get rid of ignorance with ignorance. You can only get rid of ignorance with real knowledge. And so that will only get through the Chit potency. So it's not based on the senses, it's not based on the logic, It's just based on descending knowledge of what it is. So it has to come from authority. You know, that's the only way it can work. You know, it's like the frog in the well. The frog's very intelligent, right? But he has no context. He's completely ignorant. So he does not know what's beyond. So even when he hears some shabda, because he doesn't have faith, then he can't know. If he has faith, then he could know and then move beyond. But otherwise... Okay, they are all faulty. Viparlipsa is testimony. Viparlipsa is the cheating.
Right?
Yeah. So, besides that, if you haven't got it wrong already, you'll cheat. Right? You know, it's like that. There are eight proofs, starting with sense perception. Sense perception, or pratyaksha, means using senses like the eye to contact an object. Anumiti karanam anumanam. Inference, or anumana, is the instrument of inferential cognition. For instance, one infers fire from knowledge of smoke, the cause. Shabda means trusted testimony. Upamiti karanam upamanam. Upamana is knowledge gained through observation of similarity. Quote, a gavya is like a cow. Some gya, some ji. Because in here, this similarity, upamana, this is how everything works in our brain. We always have to compare one thing to the next. That's just how we think. So that's why when you're giving the logical process, the Panchanga Nyaya, that the third part is then you're giving something similar. Right? So this is actually the point at which preaching comes in. Right? Is that you have the absolute truth. You have the basis or reasoning for what you know, the background of that, or what you're going to do with that. But then you have the example that you're going to give, and that example has to match, you know, it has to have the similarity, this upamana, to something that the person already has experience of. Because they can only go from one experience to the next, as we discussed before. Experience is concrete for the living entity. And facts are abstract. Because unless you've experienced the fact, it doesn't mean anything to you. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. So, therefore, you have to try to create an experience through this process of upamana. Right? In the process, in going through the logic. But you have to connect the individuals to that. Right? So that preaching then means that we're giving the absolute truth, but we're giving it with something that's similar, you know, has a similarity to some experience that the person you're talking to has. And so now they can start to connect it. It starts to become concrete for them. So preaching means making the absolute concrete for the individual so that they're inspired to apply it in their own life. Right? So you see, that's there. And the need for it. I mean, it's what it is, the need for it, the goal you can get, all these different things, then you're showing that sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana according to their nature. Right? So then hard preaching means you don't bother with their nature. You're taking someone who doesn't have faith and has a particular nature, and you're dealing with them as if they should have faith and they should have a similar nature to yours. So in other words, what inspires you is what you're going to use to explain to them. Which is fine. That's why you have certain preachers do very well in certain regions more than others, because their nature more matches those of that locale. And so the examples and the mood and everything they use is more accessible. So it's personal. So it's not a problem that, you know, oh no, but it should be equal to everybody, because then you make it impersonal. Right? So, but they're doing that. So if they happen to contact someone who is similar to them, then it'll work. Right? So even we say hard preaching doesn't work, it'll still work on people who are similar to the person using it. You know, like I mentioned, that now I don't know, but that you go back, you know, 15 years or so, the straight edge group of kids, they really, really appreciate really heavy preaching.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be sentimental at all. It just has to be facts that you're just hitting them over the head with. And you do that, and it sounds logical, and they are happy. You know, they become so inspired. There can't be any sentiment. They just don't like it. So it'll work. You know, but at the same time, as like I said, I had another program with people who looked basically exactly the same to me, you know, being uneducated. I didn't notice that their tattoos had color in it rather than just being the, you know, the traditional, you know, black ones. And so then I was using the same technique. And they were so freaked out because they're being emos, it has to be emotional. It can be logical, but within that emotional thing. You can't hit them over the head with it. And these are both contemporaries of each other. These two programs were within the same week. So it's not that suddenly the whole, you know, how you say, social fabric of America changed, you know, in the Northeast over that much time, right? Does that make sense? So one was in upstate New York, the other was in Boston, right? So they're right next to each other. So that's the whole thing, is that it works for those people that it works for. So therefore, preaching means being aware of the person's nature, right? And then accordingly, and then you start to speak, you see how they respond, you make adjustments until it works. That's preaching. Soft preaching, where we just don't say anything strong, but don't say anything at all either, then that's useless. So if someone has a very pleasant, soft approach, but it's to the individual, or someone has a very bold approach, but it's to the individual, they'll both work. That's preaching. But to say, no, everybody in the universe has to preach according to my nature, that doesn't work. So that's the whole idea, is that's where the variety of the Vaishnav community is, that you have so many preachers, and with having so many, then you will be able to attract a wider range of people. Right? Because if you have one preacher, you'll generally attract those individuals that he is able to preach within. If you have more preachers, then it can be broader. Does that make sense? Okay. But the central has to be pure devotional service. If it's some apara vidya, then the problem comes is, will they get to pure devotional service? Will they appreciate? Of course, we may put them on the path, they may take up the process and all that, but will they be able to go through to pure devotional service's life? Because if they don't, then they'll get attached to that particular body of knowledge that the philosophy is presented through, and then they'll continue on. But in future lives, they could take it up, because devotional service is never lost. Yes.
Another difficulty in starting with apara vidya is, like, after some time, people are not satisfied with it.
Yes.
So on the part of the preacher, there's always a tension that he has to keep updating more.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
more.
Yeah, yeah. Newer and newer and all that, and then which direction to go with it? Because as it becomes popular, then so many elements of it.
And after a certain time, he becomes outdated.
Yeah, he'll become outdated. You know, like political correctness. We use 1990s political correctness. Slightly outdated. But it's a little more pleasant than the present day one. So, in that way, I guess it's better. So that, yes. It's always going to be a problem. Because something that is completely viable, but people, due to the modes and that, they think it's not. And so it's not used. It's not appreciated. So, you know, so it's these things are always there. It's Krishna's potency. They always work. They always work.
So now, you are mentioning that preaching comes to the third aspect of Panchamaniya nowadays, you know?
Yes.
So, how can we understand the first and second aspect?
Means the first, second, fourth, and fifth then that is, you're trying to bring them to an understanding of the absolute truth. But you're trying to put it into a context where they can get they can relate to it. They see the similarity and they can match that with a valued experience of their own. So that's why, let's say, they can relate to the experience, of the example you're giving, but to them it's a bad experience. And so then you can't use that one. You have to use something else. But for another person, then that one works just fine. You see it many times. Is that what it means? Your examples that'll work can work for many, but it won't work for everybody. It just won't. I bumped into a few people. I cannot find examples that they can relate to. I mean, absolutely not. Like that. So it's just it happens. It's just you're able to deal in a certain way, and then that's there. So they may appreciate other aspects of something that you do, but they may not appreciate the logic.
Yes. Well, can we say that the first and second point are like general, but presented to some individual person?
Yes, means Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's, that's a general point. But then you're trying to present it to that individual. What method of use, what examples they'll be able to appreciate, what wordings, what tone. Yeah, so that's the whole thing. That's the experience. So that you just start to see. But the main point is, whatever it is, it's the chit potency that works. So even if they didn't appreciate what you said, but because they were in contact with the chit potency, you also see that it still has an effect. I mean, I've also heard of so many stories of devotees joining, that they come to the Sunday program. All they would do is argue. They thought everything that the devotee said was just total nonsense. And they go away and think about how to defeat the devotees, come back the next week and argue and like that, and then week after week after week. But they're hearing the philosophy. And at some point, then it starts, they get purified, and then they take up devotional service. So that's the whole point, is if you're in touch with the chit potency, it works. So that's the thing, for looking at that, then we try to find the best we can do. But even if it's not perfect, it still is better than nothing. Because the value is the person getting an experience that they can relate it into their life, so that they see the value of Krishna consciousness. What that experience is in that's another thing. Because that's what will catch people's attention. You have faith, you have conviction. That will catch their attention. Right? Because if we work by the social thing and make that the goal, as we said, how many people can you please? It's just like, let us say you have somebody, let's take, just example here, you take Paris. Right? It's not a small city. It must be some millions, right? 10 or something, or 15, or 20.
15.
15, yeah, like that. They're willing to maintain their parks, so they can't have as many people like that. Well, in New York, they're fine with it just being cement, so then you can stick more, right? So, now, 15 million people, okay? Now, let's just take the average let's just take a person. They're intelligent. They're observant. They have some, degree of social skill, and and some enough character to be, people would find them to be okay. Okay, it's an okay guy. This okay guy, on the average, how many friends does he have in the whole of Paris?
Quite a few.
Quite a few. But still, how many is that quite a few?
Huh? Very small.
Yes, very small. So even if he has five, eight, that's a lot. out of 15 million. So that's why we should never try to work on the social status thing, because who somebody writes an article, that's his opinion. And there's guarantee once you get those guys that write the articles, they have even less friends. He may have, if he's got one or two, he's doing good. He'll have a few acquaintances that agree with him. But that's it. And people will take one part of what it is, but everything else they'll leave. You know, that's the standard thing. Yeah, I like this, what he's saying here, but this over here, this is stupid. Very standard if you're reading an editorial or some journalistic kind of thing. It's just, it's not, it, so if we take the social thing that we have to please the public, and but the point is that public that you yourself personally can please is limited to probably between one to, you know, seven people. If somebody's very eclectic, then they may have friends, they may have a few groups of these few people. But those groups won't be able to get along with each other. But he can't have a party and invite all his friends because none of them will like each other. He can invite one group at a time. And he might have two, three, four groups. You know what I'm saying? But still, he can never interact with more than a handful at a time. And this is someone who's eclectic. Right? And so, and if they're eclectic, why wouldn't they appreciate the culture of Krishna consciousness? If they don't, then how eclectic are they? Right? Because eclectic generally means you have to have some cultural things and be, you know, open to. Yeah, you know, your friend is totally into Egyptian stuff like that. That's cool like that. And your other friend, he's, you know, totally into something from the Far East and that. And then you have another friend into yoga and the Orient there. And then you have someone else who's, you know, hey, collects stamps or something like that. And another guy, he's into, you know, his motorcycle. And okay, cool. You can, but they can't get along with each other, any of them. You know what I'm saying? So there has to be some cultural thing there. And so if there's not, then it wouldn't have. So therefore, when you're dealing with people that don't have that, what, eclecticity, then they're more narrow in their group. And so they're not going to like you anyway because you're not one of their group. So why even try? You know what I'm saying? People go to the church, the priest is there. It's not that they necessarily love him as a person. He speaks and they appreciate. So he's not trying to socially impress them. I mean, nowadays sometimes the more, so they try that, but it's a bit strange, you know, seeing the priest in his jeans and, you know, like that. It's you know, it's supposed to be, yeah, it's kind of, yeah, with a tattoo. Yeah, it's not that. Yeah, and they could have, you know, how you used to have the sailors, you used to have the one that said, Mom, you know, like that. So they can have, you know, have one like that with Mother Mary and baby Jesus, you know, like that. You know, Mother, yeah. You know, so. Yeah. You must have some wild tattoos on, you know, born again, you know, the tough born agains, you know, like that. Some interesting array of tattoos. So, the whole idea is that socially, why bother? Be cultured, be a gentleman, and that's as good as it gets. Now, use that as an opportunity to inject the chit potency. And you do the best you can at the time that you can understand. And Krishna will help. If we're proud, then of course it'll be difficult. But if we're not proud, then it makes it easier.
Sometimes when we try, sometimes there is a good result from one side and bad result from another side.
That's what you can do. Then if you see is there, you can even split up that you have different kinds of programs. One addresses one group, one addresses the other group. You know? And if you can do nothing about one group, then just address the one group that it does respond. You know, it's just like when you're dealing and you deal with what's the main vibe. Right? Because all the individual ones, then it just doesn't work. You know? Okay, so does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the whole idea, is this observation, similarity, but it's not based on observation of the material. You're taking the transcendence and giving them something that gives them a similarity so that they can kind of start to understand, get an access to what you're saying. That makes sense? So that's why example is there. That's the core part.
Yes.
Now, the everything around it, that is all about the Vedanta. It's just the philosophy. It's not something else. You don't preach something else. You can do that, but then what's the goal? You can say, oh, to make them Krishna conscious, but are they? You know, because I've seen is that you preach based on some modern contextual thing, and that is all you do, even as they advance.
Yes.
Then, you, like Prabhu said, you have to get more and more technical and all that, and if you're not up to date, then they may switch to someone else if that's their only interest.
Yes.
At the same time, as they get more serious about Krishna consciousness, they only see it in that context. When they bump into other devotees, most devotees, the center of their lives is not Ayurveda, astrology, or being a vegan. And so then they run into problems. You know? Or it's that, you know, doing welfare stuff, you know, we feed all the people. You know, any of these, you take any of these philanthropic and that whole list was given yesterday in Nectar Devotion. So, yeah, philanthropic, altruistic.
Social.
Yeah, all these different social, political, economic. I mean, it won't work. Krishna consciousness is the universal thing that everybody can engage their position. But you have to learn how to engage that position in pure devotion. So you have to know what it is and appreciate it. And therefore want to be engaged in that. Now, you may have these things and you engage that in Krishna's service. You like astrology, great. But you have to learn how to engage in Krishna's service. So it's not about the astrology. Does that make sense? Samgya, samgi, sambandha jnanam, upamiti. Upamiti means knowledge of the relationship between a name and an object. All of the above quotations are from Tarka Sangraha. The instrument. Karanam is knowledge of similarity. Right, so this is Baladev, right?
Baladev.
Yeah, so he's using Tarka Sangraha. So if he uses it, then, and he's our Vedanta Sutra commentator, so it must be okay. The instrument, Karanam, is knowledge of similarity. Right, so the name and objects, so you have a similarity, observation through similarity. So all these different things is that you're trying to connect that. Right? Does that make sense? Artapatti, circumstantial inference, means to infer a cause for a certain result. Right, so now you're dealing with the mind. Because these other ones, then you're dealing with the senses. You can see this, you can see that, right? Since other causes are not available, since a person is fat and one does not see him eat during the daytime, one infers that he must eat at night. So you're inferring that, but there may be something else. You don't know. Maybe he's actually an orchid and he just lives off of the air. Like that. You know? Anupalabdhi, non-perception, means cognition of non-existence. For instance, by not seeing a pot on the earth, one infers that a pot does not exist. Sambhavana, probability, means to infer that 100 must exist in 1,000. Aitihyam is knowledge handed down from the unknown speakers. For instance, quote, there is a yaksha in the tree because others have said this, end quote. These are the 8 types of proof. Anucheda 10. Thus, sense perception and other means of knowledge cannot be used as proof. The Vedas, characterized by non-material words, are the proof for persons desiring knowledge of that entity who by nature is above all things, is the shelter of all beings, and is most inconceivable and astonishing. Right, so you can say is, oh, but people would accept that. But the point is are they interested in what is above everything? What is beyond the material world? What is the spirit? What's that? If they are, then they have to accept the Vedas, because that's what it's about. You know what I'm saying? You can contest. It's just like, I want to know about math. Okay, so look at this book. Well, why should I accept this book? I'll just work it out by my own, you know. I haven't seen it. It doesn't exist. But this book's here. You can see it. you know what I'm saying? So the whole point is the Vedas, that's what they talk about. Therefore, if that's your interest, approach the Veda. So then you have to then show them how there's something beyond, something that, otherwise, why do all living entities are interested in eternal? All living entities are interested in happiness. Right? So if you put the two together, eternal happiness, right? So everyone's striving for that. But the point is everybody knows the body is temporary. Everybody dies, right? As one devotee mentions once, the mortality rate in the material world is 100%. The Prabhupada said that. Oh, okay.
There is one interviewer, she asked, oh, you come from India, there the mortality rate is high. Prabhupada said, mortality rate is everyone, everywhere, it's 100%, everyone dies.
They have nothing to say about it.
It seems that not so many people are able to adjust to this idea that they are going to die.
No. It's something from the Western culture that's in the East.
Yes.
So from India farther east, then there's an idea, because there's reincarnation and all these kind of things. But somehow or another, once you get to the Abrahamic, they've dropped the idea of reincarnation. It got lost, you know, somewhere.
Yeah.
Like that. And so then they don't really have that. It means just, you know, be good, go to heaven. So you have one shot. And then as you go farther up, you know, into Europe and all that, then they don't even get into that.
A few years ago, Maharaj, I was doing Sankirtan in France, and my mantra was like that. I was doing door-to-door. So, okay, presentation and that, and after, what are you going to do if you have only 7 days to do? If you have 7 days to leave, what are you going to do? It was shocking for them.
Yeah. Give them a few more days. Give them 6 months or something,
I was introducing Bhagavatam.
Oh, okay, Vic, about that, yeah.
Some people were, I remember one lady was very, open, to that idea,
Very rare, Generally, it's one of the things, that devotees always found, at least I heard in America, is that nobody wants to talk about death. Because we so easily talk about it, and some people freak out. They say they like the philosophy, it makes sense, but I don't like all this talking about death. Because they're really freaked out about that.
When I was in New York to the temple and all, in the college, one devotee used to always talk about his favorite topic during prasadam, is to talk about death and how it is missed. And one boy went and complained very heavy. He wakes me frequently.
Yeah, pick another time. This is lunch. You don't talk about death.
It's the only time everybody's together. Otherwise, everybody got to the college.
Yeah, but still, you can pick another topic. This knowledge has been handed down through all devatas and humans who sprung from Brahma and all the later dynasties time and time again with no beginning. Sarva Paramarasu. Since the Vedas contain all material and spiritual knowledge, karma and jnana. Anucheda Prakashika. Pratyaksha and Anuman depend on sense perception, which is limited only to empirical objects and vitiated by the four human defects. Thus, direct perception and inference are inadequate by themselves for completely understanding anything beyond our senses. By tracing that, and you know, you can't understand beyond that. You can't even understand what you're seeing properly because of the defects. By tracing the chain of causes in material creation, the wise infer that something exists beyond our sense perception, but inference fails to identify it. Nor can inference yield valid knowledge about Abhideya, the process for realizing it. Because you don't actually know what it is, how do you know how to get? If you don't know what the goal is, how do you know? If I say, yes, you should go somewhere, you know, well, where do I go? Like that. No, no, just you should go. So, you know, like this and that, you know, but, you know, so you don't know what to do. What if the go somewhere is leave this room, you know, I want to be alone. You know. And so that's the whole thing. You don't know, so you can't therefore understand. You're trying to attain something beyond. You have to know what it is to know what the process is. So only then the Veda then knows what's beyond, knows the process to gain that, and then to apply the process, you have to have an identity and understand how everything else is identified, so that you understand how they all interact. Then only you can apply it and get the result. So Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, but that can't not be revealed by Pratyaksha and Anuman. Thus, they are all useless in approaching the transcendental reality. That higher reality simply cannot be reached by human endeavor. Only when it chooses to reveal itself can anyone know it. In Vedic terms, the process needs to be descending, avaroha panta, rather than ascending, aroha panta. The absolute truth makes itself known in the most reliable way by shabda, that is, apaurusheya, not created by any mortal being. Useful though they may be, pratyaksha and anuman are supportive, only shabda is imperative. In his commentary to the present Anucheda, Jiva Goswami proceeds from this point as follows. In this way, we can conclude that verbal testimony is the only certain means for acquiring valid knowledge. And having thus concluded, we should consider precisely what this shabda is. Oh, Sava Sampadani 26 means to the 26th Anucheda.
It is like point 26, number is the 26th. In Sarva Samvadhani commentary, he wrote like a separate group of points together.
Oh, but have we seen those points here?
No, nowhere it's mentioned. Nowhere it's just mentioned in one of the. This is mentioned, I think, by Gopikaranam. It's the numbers for the Sarva Samvadhani. But Maharaj, his way of translating is only.
Oh, maybe it means the shloka 26 number. No, it doesn't mean that. Just the point. Okay, so Bhanu Maharaj didn't translate it using those points.
Maharaj style is he put only what is necessary, rest of all. He doesn't put everything fully. Even Baladeva Vidya Bhushan commentary here, even in the Bhakti Rasamrita symbol, he puts it only what is appropriate. That's how the book is very concise.
Okay. Sri Baladeva Vidyabhushan remarks that Shabda Pramana is contaminated when subject to the imperfection of ordinary speakers. Then it is Paurusheya. In such cases, each authority presents quote-unquote final theories, only to be corrected by successors. In the words of the Mahabharata, Vanaparva 2.9.7, Na chasvarishir yasya matam na bhinnam. Quote, one is not considered a sage unless he has a different opinion of his own. End quote. To approach the absolute truth, then, one must hear from a transparent intermediary connected to the aparusheya source of knowledge. So even you're hearing from the Veda, which is pure, but if it comes through the conditioning of the living entity without the connection with the chit potency, then again it will take on the imperfections of that person. So only when you hear it from parampara, then it actually has meaning. Sarva Sambadini. Since Shabda was concluded to be the proof, one must consider the nature of Shabda. It cannot end simply with the definition shabda as words devoid of defects like Brahma. Since everyone will conclude, quote, my knowledge is devoid of fault, end quote. Obvious, right? It will not be possible to discern the real truth. This type of shabda is understood through pratyaksha and follows after someone else's pratyaksha. Thus, it is not acceptable as proof. So therefore, the modern, academy, that you have the books and here's the proof, and but that's just following someone else's pratyaksha. So it started with somebody and their senses. Right? Even though today that somebody's a nobody, but still, yeah.
Can you say that he started from the deviation, the six devotees?
Yeah. It's already started from that imperfection, and then they just find enough evidence, or they cleverly can put it together so it sounds logical and then make it into a theory. And that's why then, later on, someone will come along and find faults in it. Because technically, the Vedic is, this is the authority, and you try to defeat the doubts that you have concerning that authority until you're in line with the authority, and then you see that revelation is there and you are able to understand more and more. Right? So you're removing the doubt, then you can appreciate the authority. While in the modern academy, we see is that something stands as long as no one has a way to defeat it. So the point is they defeat it and just replace it with theirs. Right? And then however long that stands until someone else comes up, because some may defeat some big guy, but he won't stand because someone else immediately defeats them. You know, so like that. It just goes. And so it's not about removing the doubts so that you can understand what's descending or what's being revealed. It's a matter of, unless, you know, from beginning to end it doesn't fit with my pratyaksha and anuman, then it's not real. Does that make sense? So that's why you see is that we hold on to these mundane concepts. Then what we'll do is that we will see the absolute truth and we'll accept those portions that agree with my perception. So if I'm on Dharma, Artha, Kama, or Moksha, whichever one is prominent for me, then, you know, or how I measure things by, then those aspects of the philosophy that match that, I'll be inclined towards those. The ones that don't, I'll avoid. Right? So then it will be a problem. That's different from which part applies to you in the position you're in. You accept the Veda, and right now I'm in this place. So I apply it like this, but as I mature, as things develop, then it may have to adjust them. Right? So, like that. Does that make sense? But this other is that I only accept it if it matches what I'm into. And I may be pleasant enough that what doesn't match, I don't worry about. And so I follow what works for me, and because there is some aspect that's connected, I will advance in those areas. But the areas that I don't accept it, that's going to be a stumbling block. But you do have those that, the areas that they don't accept, then they have to, you know, how you say, get on their horse and ride to Jerusalem, right? You know, does that make sense? You know, try to remove the infidels and all that kind of jazz. So then that problem comes up is that now they're going against the Vedic version because they're taking it that their perception is actual knowledge. What they say is shabda. You know, like it mentions here. Jiva Goswami is saying. Thus, it is not acceptable as proof. That which is replicated by all living individual learning, that which, by knowing, all people become completely knowledgeable, that which makes pratyaksha and other methods become pure with the highest knowledge, and that which is self-accomplished without beginning, which is all Mahavakyas and the root of all traditional knowledge, should be accepted as shabda. That shabda is scripture and the Vedas. It is knowledge which is as eternal as the Vedas. So that's because everybody can benefit. Otherwise, our opinion, certain people will benefit and others won't. Vritti. Jiva Goswami indicates the timeless feature of Shabda in this verse by describing the Shrutis and as Anadi Siddha, not created but existing without a beginning. Yeah, so that's the difference. It's Anadi Siddha and we're Anadi, Bada. Yeah, so better we go with the Siddha, right? They are not created but existing without a beginning. They are co-eternal with the absolute truth, and hence not altered at any time by any mortal being. The Vedas appeared from the Supreme Lord at the dawn of creation, a fact confirmed in the Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.8. Yo Brahmanam Vidadhati Purvam Yo Vedas Cha Prahim Noti Tasmai. So that Supreme Lord created Brahma at the beginning of creation and gave him the Vedas. End quote. Consequently, all knowledge descends from the Vedas. The various branches of worldly scholarship and even corrupted and faulty teachings are all derivative reflections of the original Vedic knowledge. In Srimad Bhagavatam 4.14, 3-8, Lord Krishna gives an outline of how this came to be so. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said to Uddhava, by the influence of time, the transcendental sound of Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma because I myself am the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas. So he is the religious principles. So that's why everything's supposed to be for him, because he is the religious. So for following religious principles for artha, karma, dharma, and moksha, that then we've missed the point because he is the religious principles. So. So it gets lost at the time of annihilation. So whatever happens, something changes, it's lost. So Veda means knowledge. So any knowledge, so Veda is all the knowledge. Then a certain portion may be revealed, but it doesn't mean all the knowledge is not there. Right? Now, with time, people know less and less of this, what's revealed, because a lot's revealed. And then people, by observation, they see things. Now, the facts that are there that are in line with the Shabda are correct, and those are the ones that work. Right? Because if you take ones that aren't in line, then they don't work. They'll be temporary. They'll work for a shortened period of time and not. You know, just like, let's say, in architecture now, they do all kinds of things. Like in Sydney, Sri Prahlad Prabhu was teaching, professor at one of the, I think, the Sydney University there. And one of their newer buildings is actually made like a brown paper bag, that you put groceries in or your lunch in. Really, really weird shaped building. It literally looks like a paper bag. It was designed to look like a paper bag. Right? So they do all kinds of things. So amazing, work and design to make something that big look like a paper bag. You have to hand it to them for that. And then the engineers, how they put it together that they make this paper bag stand up and not fall over. And work into it all the different, the lighting and this and that. And so it still looks like a paper bag. So then, but the problem is that everybody says it's amazing now and one of the most unique and this and that, but come back probably in 20, 30 years and people will just say it looks stupid. Who would make a building look like a paper bag? Right? Now, let us say we go to some of these old places, like say Notre Dame, right? That's hundreds of years old, right? It's still classic, it still looks good. You the Vatican, any place you go to, the old buildings that are there more in Vienna. They have a lot of buildings. Somehow or other, they didn't seem to have been disturbed during the war. So any place, or that one area, Prague, there's a bridge there. I think it's 1,000 years old. People go from all over the world to see it. Like that. So So these things are classic because they follow traditional lines that the Veda mentions, though they don't know they're from the Veda, but they've observed and seen that this works. So it's still the knowledge of the Veda, though they don't know it comes from the Veda. So that's the point being made. All derivative reflections of the original Vedic knowledge. Now if you know it, you know what it's for, how to use it, and you know it in connection with transcendence, now it becomes perfect. Yeah. Lord Brahma spoke this Vedic knowledge to his eldest son Manu and the seven great sages headed by Bhrigu Muni, then accepted the same knowledge from Manu. From the forefathers headed by Bhrigu Muni and other sons of Brahma appeared many children and descendants who assumed different forms as demigods, demons, human beings, Guhyakas, Siddhas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Charnas, Kindevas, Kinaras, Nagas, Kimpurushas, and so on. Oh, I see. Kindeva means what kind of demigod is this, and Kinara means what kind of human is this. Right? You know, if you see a guy sitting there, you know, at the bench waiting for the bus and all that, you know, and he has his, you know, his suit on and all that, and his briefcase, and he's reading the paper, but you notice he has a horse head like that, then you might ask, Kinara, what kind of human is this? Right? Yeah. All of the many universe, and so on, all of the many universal species, along with their respective leaders, appeared with different natures and desires generated from the three modes of material nature. Therefore, because of the different characteristics of the living entities within the universe, there are a great many Vedic rituals, mantras, and rewards. This whole thing is from a Srimad Bhagavatam
translation.
Sorry?
Bhagavatam translation.
They're all... Oh, okay. Thus, due to the great varieties of desires and natures among human beings, there are many different theistic philosophies of life, which are handed down through tradition, custom, and disciplic succession. There are other teachers who directly support atheistic viewpoints. Prashanda, Matayo Pare, Srimad Bhagavatam 11, 14, 3 through 8. So these are all the translations, yes. Starting from where?
It's mentioned the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Oh, okay. Then you should put a quotation at the beginning of each of the ones.
Okay.
Otherwise you know then it's a continuation of that quote. The end you don't necessarily have to, you can or not.
Okay.
I think Americans don't like to put anything they don't have to put, they just don't. You know, even though traditionally it might be nice, it helps. But, you don't have to, so they don't. But where Lord Brahma and thus, those two places you should put. And also here in Shuma, oh no. Okay, this be so. Okay. These statements, okay, now we're back to the Sarva Sambhadini, so this is Jiva Goswami.
Yes.
Yes.
What is the difference between tradition and custom?
Tradition and custom. Custom.
Mm.
Tradition means if you're looking at it from Manu, who is quoted here, then he's explaining that you have the Veda. That's itself what it is. It's the four Vedas and all the knowledge connected with that. Then tradition is those scriptures that are based on discussions between the demigods and the great sages and, you know, these great personalities, the Supreme Lord and all these, with each other. And those conversations that are based on the Veda and how they're applying the Veda and advancing and developing from following the Veda, that's called Smriti. Right? So Shruti is the Veda, Smriti is these conversations. That's all called tradition. Right? Because tradition is something that you do because it works. Right? Now, with time, if people don't have the knowledge, then they say, why are we doing this? And so then they change it. They don't, because they don't know, they don't know that it works. That's why people do it. So then they don't do it because it's old-fashioned, because people have been doing it. They try something new, it may or may not work, and even if it does work with time, it won't work. And so then they just keep going on, they never go back, and somebody might bring it back to that old traditional thing. Might. but then there'll be a fashion, and then, you know, like this. So the difficulty is that's what works. That's what all the great sages do. That's what the followers, the perfected souls that follow the Vedas, that's what they do. So it's tradition. Right? And then we have, within that, then you have the great personalities, the aptas, that then, you know, in more current time, that they then give directions how we are able to follow those, that tradition based on the Veda, and apply it in our life. So the previous acharyas, something like this. Then we have, and within that you may have specifics of how it's applied according to that line. Like the Gaudiyas, they do certain things in a certain way. That'll be custom. Then you also have the common custom, just how people do things. You know, they do it, and that's all. You know, it's just like you go into, you know, any house in Asia, you leave your, there's a place to leave your shoes at the door, and you go inside and like that. But in the West, you don't leave your shoes there. You only leave, let's say, if you have, you know, wellies or some, you know, overshoe. For the mud or for this, that you'll leave there at the door, along with the overcoat. So anything that's outside of your normal wear, you'll leave there. You know? Does that make sense? So that's their custom.
Yes.
So it's just how it's being applied. So then, how much those customs are in line with the Veda, then they're useful. That's why it says that a favorite fruit or root or something that is important to you, that's also offerable, you should offer. You don't offer the you know, things that are very dear to you that aren't offerable. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's like you like drinking champagne out of a shoe, that doesn't mean we offer it to Krishna. Right? Right? Neither the shoe or the champagne. Or the champagne, right?
You offer the water of the champagne.
Huh?
You offer the water of the champagne.
Yes, yes. Well, that's another thing. That's in the beginning, give us that. When you're starting with the Anadi principle, then we could like that. You offer the sparkly water, like the local, like Perrier, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So now the question is: the discipline succession is clear, but the tradition is mean. It can be tradition without parampara, seems to me.
It's called tradition, but that's generally what we'd call custom. It's a lokaika. Lokaika just means what the people do. And that's what they do now. And you come back, you go to another region, they do something different. Or you come back after some years, they don't do it anymore. They do something else. So it just, things just change. What they do, what they like. So, yeah. So it just becomes the custom is there. But here when we're talking, you know, in scripture about tradition, or we're talking about tradition that's recommended, we're talking that is what's coming down through the optas. From Shastra, if it's what's recommended there, then what the ancients, what they did, and then what our acharyas did. Like that. And then those who are successful at following all that, what they're doing. You know, it's just like, let's say you're doing Hari Nam, then many will follow what Indradyumna Maharaj or Sri Prahlad would do. You know, because it works. It works very nicely. Or others who, that, you know, they're very much into, like that, you follow that, but they'll be very prominent in that. Let's say book distribution, then you're going to follow, you know, those who do the book distribution. You know, they've been doing for the last, you know, 30, 40 years, and, you know, the methods they talk about and all that, and you follow them. You know, some manager, you look at community, they look to Chopati, they look to manager, they look to this one or that one, and, you know, so many different things that is there, that you see is that they're following the previous acharyas, you know, and that, and they're successful. So then we could follow them and like that. So it becomes, you know, our, you know, in that way, our tradition. But it has to be, it's only become, because it's based on, it has to work, and according to the purposes of the Veda. Those statements with no human origin, arising again and again in each creation from the Lord, who is the cause of all causes. Statements which are present without beginning are without the faults such as Brahma, right, illusion and that. All people should accept the scriptures for teachings about the highest truth. They are unfailing proof. By the Lord's mercy, anyone can accept the scriptural teachings. Why should fools with coarse knowledge not accept them and accept instead false statements? One must accept scriptures which teach about the Lord. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam. Here also again it went in very far. It indented very far. And is it the same size as the vritti?
Yes.
Oh, maybe because it's in farther, it compressed a bit more. According to Vedanta, so this is explains in purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 2.5.15. According to the Vedanta Sutras, Shastrayonitvat, the Supreme Lord is the author of all revealed scriptures. And all revealed scriptures are for knowing the Supreme Lord. Veda means knowledge that leads to the Lord. The Vedas are made just to revive the forgotten consciousness of the conditioned souls. And any literature not meant for reviving God consciousness is rejected at once by the Narayana Para devotees. Such deluding books of knowledge, not having Narayan as their aim, are not at all knowledge, but are the playgrounds for crows who are interested in the rejected refuse of this world. Any book of knowledge, science or art, must lead to the knowledge of Narayana, otherwise it must be rejected. That is the way of advancement of knowledge. So, any book of knowledge, science or art, must lead to the knowledge of no Lord Narayana. Then it becomes aparavidya. Means taking that material knowledge, connecting it to the Lord and using it in the Lord's service, it becomes apara. It's in service of para. It's not para, but it becomes like para by being engaged. But if it's not used in the Lord's service, then it becomes avidya, or ignorance. So it's rejected. Purvapaksha. Scriptures like Ayurveda would accept the Lord should not be accepted, since they are like other works without solid proof. Right? So here is this saying that these aparavidya, they accept the Lord, they shouldn't be accepted. Because like they're without solid proof, right? How do you know that all this works? Where does that come from? Uttara, that is not so. Other works are also accepted as scripture if they follow after the Vedas. So they're based on the Veda, then it's there. Because you could say as, oh, but they've come down through different persons and all that. Because it's that you have like Charak Samhitas is Charaka. Muni, he's given that. Or Shushruta by him. Or these different Dandantari like this. So then... they can say, but it's not the Veda, so therefore it should be rejected, right? Because you do have those, if it's not Veda, they don't accept it. So I'm really not sure with those who only accept Shruti, what do they do for medicine? Right? I think what they do is cleverly connect it, as they call that Upaveda. And so therefore the Ayurveda connects to the Yajurveda. And so in that way, it's considered a branch of the Ayurveda. But the Puranas aren't connected in this way by them. Though we see is that Vyasadeva, that they're the fifth Veda. That'll be explained as it comes up. The Itihas. Purvapaksha. Buddha is also the Lord. Sorry?
It is to be so. That.
So, which one?
Buddha is also the Lord, so his words are also true.
Oh, Buddha is also the Lord. So his words are proof. Uttara. The same scriptures which state that he is the Lord also say he wrote scriptures to bewilder the demons. Right? So if we're accepting the Veda, then it, like that, then that says that he came to bewilder the demons. So he's the Lord, but what he spoke is not. Does that make sense? So you can see here is that these arguments come up. They don't have to be logical or in an order. It's just they have arguments. That's all. We have issues. Like that. Footnote 20. Although Vaishnavas count Lord Buddha among the incarnations of the Lord on the strength of Vedic testimony, they reject his philosophy because it is not based on Shabda Praman. Vritti. Next, in the Sarva Sambhadini, Jiva Goswami initiates a technical discussion on epistemological procedure. and the independent position of Shabda Pramana, right? Epistemological meaning the how you get your knowledge, right? So Pratyaksha, Anuman, and Shabda. Right? Jiva, Sri Jiva does this by quoting at length from the Brahmati, a work by the 10th century scholar Vachaspati Misra. It is one of the most influential commentaries on Shankaracharya's Advaitavada interpretation of the Vedanta Sutras. Its impersonal philosophical viewpoint is unacceptable to Vaishnavas, but Srila Jiva still cites this passage as authoritative on the technical topic of the Vedas being independent of other Pramanas. Right, so it means what's correct, that part will be accepted. That doesn't mean that because part's correct, everything's correct. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say, you have the bank robbers. Right? So we would generally say they're not nice guys, right? They're taking other people's money, and these other people would really like to have their money. They want to use it for, you know, different things, buy a house, health issues, their kids, you know, education in the future. So if somebody takes it, that's not good. Right? But now, let us say, when he comes out of the bank and he drives his car, he's very expert at driving his car. Amazing driving his car. So, just because you appreciate how good he is at driving his car, doesn't mean you accept his purpose and everything else. That part's okay. Everything else is nonsense. So in other words, if any of these scholars give a very good definition of something, it's accepted. Like Chanakya, niti, that wisdom that's there, then that's accepted, but he's not a devotee. But that's accepted for that. That's then given in line with pure devotion, then it has some value. But without, then it's also just another waste of time. Does that make sense? So we have to be able to do that, because sometimes they say, oh, but you know, we went down to the yoga studio and they're so nice and all that, now we accept everything and get distracted. Oh, they're nice means, okay, they'll listen to us, they'll hear kirtan, they'll take prashad, like that. So then we take it, we then associate based on those principles that they're willing to take part in Krishna consciousness. But it's not that, oh, because they're nice, now everything they do and their values and how they do things and we follow.
Here, Jiva Goswami quotes from Vachaspati Misra. One of the reasons why the Sandarbhas are known the books is because he thoroughly refutes Vachaspati Misra later on. Like, everybody can say, this is amazing, like, very minutely depicts each and every point.
Right. And he is considered the most influential commentator on Shankara.
Yeah.
Yes, if you defeat him, the whole school's gone. Right? Yeah. You know, Artarka Sangraha, it's not written that I know of by any Vaishnavas. But it's accepted by all logicians. You know, because it defines that, it has the proper thing, so it's accepted. Purvapaksha. Okay. That's now, or is that's coming up? That's worked into here, or that's some other place?
No, that will come when we start in the Pramaya section.
I mean, he'll quote from him or defeat him?
Defeat him.
Here when does he quote from him?
Here, the Uttara is all Vachaspati Mishra.
Oh, okay. So, okay. He's using Vachaspati to defeat anyone who doesn't accept the authority of Shabda.
Yes.
Vachaspati Mitra. Is he the same as Vidya Vachaspati?
Vidya Vachaspati.
Is he someone else? Because I've always heard of Vidya Vachaspati. And then there's also Vachaspati Mitra. So is it the same Vidya Vachaspati Mitra? Okay.
Vachaspati is connected to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya.
I'm not sure. Is he?
He's 10th century.
He's the 10th century one.
Okay.
That is the 15th century.
Okay.
Okay, so 10th century. Unless he had some good Ayurvedic doctor that kept him going. Purvapaksha. Okay, so the doubt is whatever arguments are there by those who oppose the Vedas, and then the Uttara is then by Vachaspati Misra. Okay. Purvapaksha. The Vedas are contrary to pratyaksha, which is a prior source of knowledge. The Vedas depend on pratyaksha and are therefore not authoritative or must be interpreted with lakshana. Right? Lakshana means you're not direct, indirect. You know, you have to use kind of figurative and that kind of poetic aspect. It means what is said in the Veda doesn't match pratyaksha. Right? And pratyaksha is there first. You know, because I see that first. I came across the Vedas later. Right? Uttara. The Vedas do not depend on anything else for producing knowledge as their effect. Since the Vedas are self-accomplished proof, without human authorship, apodosheya, which means that all doubts about their faults should be removed. Footnote 21. Svata pramana veda pramana shiromani lakshana karile svata pramanata hani. Quote, the self-evident Vedic literatures are the highest evidence of all. But if these literatures are interpreted, their self-evident nature is lost. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 7.132. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport the following. We quote Vedic evidences to support our statements, but if we interpret it according to our own judgment, the authority of the Vedic literature is rendered imperfect or useless, right? That was your question before. So that's why it has to be in the parampara, and we stick to the mood given by, and we approach the previous acharyas by our acharyas so that there won't be any deviation of it. Does that make sense? Because if we follow Prabhupada, then we see all the literatures of the Goswamis and that before Srila Prabhupada, in light of how Srila Prabhupada revealed it to us, right? Then everything we see is the same. There may be different details given, but the principle will always be the same. So then that means I have to surrender to this, because then they're saying what's there, and then they have their acharyas previous to them, then there's Krishna speaking to Uddhava, then Bhagavatam, and like this. So that works. But now if we study them separately, Prabhupada saying this, Jiva Goswami saying that, Vishwanath saying this, Baladev saying that, then now what do you take? Right? So what's going to be the final, ultimate, absolute conclusion?
Kichuri.
Well, Kichuri, but who decides on the Kichuri?
I am.
Yes, of course. So therefore I can follow what they're contradicting each other, so I have to come up with my own conclusion. In a sense. So that element of being a jnani is therefore remaining. One has to cross that. One has to surrender to the Lord and not, how you say, hold on to that attachment. In other words, by interpreting the Vedic version, one minimizes the value of Vedic evidence. When one quotes from Vedic literature, it is understood that the quotations are authoritative. How can one bring the authority under his own control? That's the point. Then you know that you're taking the Vedic knowledge as an anga of your own philosophy. Right? So that means if it's come from yourself, because when you're theistic morality, that means it's based on Shastra. There has to be authority. It comes from God. So it must be based on Scripture. Right? Then, but if you can have that bhakti is an anga of this, morality. You accept Scripture, you accept the Lord, but devotion to the Lord is just part of my fruitive or, you know, liberation, oriented, endeavor. But when it's that the Vedas only, how much they support my philosophy, then that means it's potusheya. It's not coming from the Scriptures. So automatically it drops below the Vedic version. So then that's probably, how can one bring the authority under his control? Because then it's our own. Then you're trying to deal with something that's beyond Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, and trying to make it fit into, Artha or Kama. Right? Because Dharma means it's Veda. Right? And moksha means it has to also be based on Veda. Just that you may not accept the complete conclusion of the Veda. Right?
Does that mean? We have to be very careful.
Yes, we have to be very careful.
It's very easy to.
Yes, that's why we have what the acharyas say. We have the directions and culture given by them. We stick to that as closely as we can. We're not worried about learning or gaining anything from other sources, because whatever it is, they will change it anyway. Right? And even if you say it's changed, no one's using it, there's still people using it. You know what I'm saying? It's just the way it is. It's just anything that's gone out of fashion, there's still people using it. And it still works. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that we're changing with the fashion, even though it still works. It's saying, oh, it doesn't work anymore, but it still works. Is that what it says? Yeah. People have washing machines, you can wash things by hand. Huh? In fact, anything that you have that's really valuable, you wash it by hand. You know, all the cheap stuff goes into the washing machine.
Yeah, I'm not so stupid.
Yeah. Okay. In other words, if you can throw it in the washing machine, it's not couture. Right? Okay. Purva Paksha. Oh no. Okay. Next time. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.